I'm the game director at a studio called Holopons. I guess I'm the creative director. I'm also a programmer. Like, the main work I do on our games is programming. Just a bit more context about Holopons. It's a little studio run by myself and my wife, Nikki. We mostly work with freelancers. We've got a little studio space in London. Most folks work with us remotely. And depending on what we're up to, we have as many as maybe 20 people working on games, and sometimes as few as two. Just going to quickly, again for context, just spin through some of the earlier stuff we've made. So this is a game that we released in 2020. It's called I Am Dead. This was our first Unreal Engine game. This was about, took us about 2.5 years to make. It's a narrative adventure game. It's about death and memory and loss. And it's also a kind of hidden object game where you can slice through geometry in real time, which was a really stupid first 3D game to make. Before that, we made this game called Wilmot's Warehouse, a game for people who like to organize stuff. This came out in 2019. You're this little square with a face called Wilmot, and you run a warehouse. And every few minutes, a van arrives and dumps a load of stuff into the warehouse. And these products are all just like icons with images on them. And then a few minutes later, at the other end of the warehouse, a hatch opens and people want stuff. And you just have to make sure that you can find all the things that they're asking for, and that just means being as organized as possible. Things become a real mess if you're not well organized. Before that, we made a game called Loot Rascals, which was really inspired by card and board games. It's a sort of hex turn-based movement system with a kind of card deck building mechanic built on top. For this next one, I'm going to show a video. This is a game called Hohokam. We released this on 2014 originally on PlayStation. I'm showing a bit of the video of this because it's kind of relevant to the game we're making at the moment in some ways. So yeah, you're this kind of rainbow worm that flies around these colourful worlds, interacting with stuff. It's a pretty free-form game. It's about the joy of movement and music and exploring. So, the rest of this talk is going to be about this game called Flock, which we've been making for, like 3.5 years now. We're nearly finished with it. I'm going to show some videos which have debug views in them, so if you see a thing that looks like some weird like debug view, that's why. You can play Flock here in the evenings. It's being projected on the inside of a dome to the left of the arcade. I want to start by talking about the idea of like video games as a virtual space to hang out in. I'm just going to show a video of the game. This is basically from our first gameplay trailer. Hello. So it's a game where you explore this big wild place on the back of a giant bird. And you find creatures and you identify them, and you can learn songs that charm them into your flock. We started making this game in 2020 during COVID lockdown. And during this time, we were playing lots of multiplayer games with our friends, because that's the only way we could hang out with our friends at that time. And a lot of the things that we were playing were things that were more like virtual spaces to hang out in than like video games. So we played like Minecraft mods, and we played lots of Roblox games. Lots of things where you're just sort of noodling around in this world on your own, very often just doing your own thing, and kind of just chatting as well. Like, you're sort of talking about the game, but you're definitely not like having mostly conversations about the game, or like using those conversations to coordinate what you're doing, or like have some kind of shared purpose. These games, even some of the games we played, like Valheim, which is like an in-depth sort of Viking simulator, they don't make huge demands on players to coordinate play. So it can be a bit like you're playing your own sort of single-player game alongside a friend. And that was a really big inspiration for us, just that feeling of like games as a space rather than as primarily as a game. So yeah, Flock has co-op mechanics, but primarily we've designed it to just be a nice place to hang out with your friends. It's a big sort of sprawling world that's hopefully nicely, believably organic. And we're sort of aiming for a nice feeling of like going for a walk in nature with your friends. That's a sheet that our narrative designer Pip knitted. I'm gonna jump on to the next one. So one of the starting points was that I showed that game Hohokam, and one of the starting points for this game was like wanting to make a bit of a spiritual sequel to it, or a successor maybe. Like another game that's about the joy of movement, where you just flying around in this world just feels intrinsically enjoyable. And a big part of the way the movement feels in Flock is this idea of the invisible skate park. So I'm just showing some more footage from the game. So I was standing in a place called Zadar on the Croatian coast in one spring when we started making this game. And I was surrounded by big boxy apartment buildings everywhere. I was in a kind of courtyard. And above me were these swallows flying around, like loads of them. And they were like just wheeling around in the sky in this, you know, very boxy, human-built environment, but their movement was totally organic. It was like totally smooth, like you could sort of see the sine waves, and it really felt like somebody had draped this invisible blanket over all the buildings, and all the birds were like sliding around on it, like a kind of, you know, you could almost like defocus your eyes and imagine that they were just like skating on this skate park that nobody else could see. And I really had the hunch that like doing something like this would be a good way to approach movement in Flock. So we built this system of like, yeah, draping this kind of invisible mesh that gets generated from all the world geometry that kind of accounts for if there's a steep slope, then the bird needs further to like get up to the top of it. And it's all sort of in service of this idea that we have that like the real birds don't crash very often. Like they'll fly into maybe windows, but like in most of their environments, they don't crash into stuff. They just fly around, avoiding things. And so, as the player, I guess you're kind of cast as the rider of the bird, and you tell the bird which way to go. But the bird then adds its own layer of interpretation onto that, so it will, you know, it will flow smoothly up and over things. It will never crash into trees. It will just flow naturally around them while still maintaining the direction that you try and send it into. So there are no wall collisions. You can't crash into anything. The player has no direct control over the bird's height. You know, it's like a skate park, so the bird can kind of ramp up over these invisible ramps and then drift back down again. But yeah, it has its very nice feeling of flow. Even though you can't see the surface that it's moving on, over time you really start to intuit how it's going to move. We spent a long time controlling the bird's speed. Like, it's really important that you can move really quickly, but because it's also a game about you know, taking notice of things and spotting creatures, and you also need to be able to move really slowly and have time to observe your environment. The game's full of creatures. There are like 60 different species, all split into 12 families. This is a really early sketch that our art director Dick Hogg made, like before we started making any models of creatures. I'm showing this rather than the game stuff just because the real, you know, art would be quite spoilery, I suppose. A big part of the game is like finding all these creatures and figuring out like what the taxonomy of them is. And for a long time, the game loop was like when you found a creature in the world, it would like add this little sketch of the creature to your logbook, and then you'd have to go back to this NPC character, this naturalist, and like say, oh yeah, can you identify all the creatures I've made sketches of? And then it would like kind of color all the sketches in. But we were playtesting that, and it just didn't feel that fun. It was like, people sort of zoned out because it was boring just being told a load of stuff. And also, some people were like really into the idea that we had put these creatures into, you know, 12 quite believable families. And they were sort of, when they see a creature, they'd start speculating. So we kind of realized that we were missing a trick by not like making gameplay out of this idea of players being able to identify creatures. So now when you find a creature in the world, you get this little sort of mini game, I suppose, where you get to look at it, and then if you haven't encountered the family before, it will tell you what the family is. If you have found the family before, it will ask you, like, hey, which family do you think this creature belongs to? You've definitely seen it before, so maybe you can figure it out. And then it'll show you like a bunch of descriptions of creatures in that family, and let you like look at the descriptions and see if you can figure out what it is. And it's very like basic. It's like very sort of light. There's no reward for it. There's no penalty for failing it. But it's really just like in the service of letting players role play as this naturalist. So I'm going to talk a bit about how you make flocks in this game and how the flock works. So once players have identified creatures, that they also can learn secret songs to charm them. And then when they charm them, you kind of interact with the creature, and you have this other mini game that's like proximity based. So you need to be close enough, but not too close. There's a sort of sweet spot of distance. And all of the different creatures have different movement patterns and the way they move, and some of them are quite easy to catch, some of them are quite passive, and it's very easy to get that right distance. Others, you know, will dash off in a direction or make sudden turns or, you know, wiggle away, and can be a bit more difficult later, and we do other stuff like time limits and whatnot. But yeah, you catch a bunch of creatures, players have a lot of control over what's in their flock, sort of hoping that people will like want to almost like treat the creatures in their flock part of their outfit, I suppose, like that goes along with the clothes their character's wearing and the colour of their bird and stuff. We'll talk a bit about how the flock works. So there's this classic way of programming flocks. There's this system called Boyds, where you give each member of the flock a kind of set of forces that, like, it wants to stay in the middle of its flock, but it also doesn't want to get too close to any of its immediate neighbours. But we pretty early on realised we probably didn't want to use this, because for one thing it gets more computationally complicated as the flocks get bigger. Every time you add a member to the flock, you suddenly have to check all, you know, collisions with all of the other members of that flock. So it kind of, the algorithm grows with expensiveness exponentially. But also, this is a multiplayer game, this is a network game, and so we're running, you know, four people are all flying around together in this world, and you want, as cheaply as possible in terms of network traffic, the view of the world to be as consistent as possible. And so we really wanted something a bit more simple and easy to resolve in that way, rather than everyone doing their own flock calculations and then, yeah. So what we did was, the flocks are actually just like a bunch of spline deformed point clouds. So what that means is that the flock is basically a big point of clouds, a big cloud of points, in a kind of roughly in a cylindrical shape. So if you imagine a cylinder, and we fill it with random points, and then as the bird flies around, it's constantly dropping points behind it, and that makes a big kind of spline, a big like wobbly path that the bird's following. And then we take that cylinder of points, and we basically just kind of bend it onto the path. And what that does is it gives us like a completely consistent way across all the computers that's really cheap to calculate, it's really quick to calculate. You can have as many, you know, you can have way more members of a flock than we actually do. And it looks a bit mechanical, so then what you do is start to like cheat by like giving each member its own little drift forwards and backwards, and its drift sidewards that depends on how far back the flock they are. Or you do stuff like, well, as the bird turns quickly around a corner, you make all the flock members bend, push outwards, but maybe a bit more depending on how far from the edge they are. So you get these kind of organic movement forms that kind of disguise the sort of cheapness of what we're doing here. There's a shepherding minigame. So we really like the idea that they're these wild creatures and you kind of get them into your flock and they'll come and go. But we also wanted this sense of like you having some creatures that you look after permanently, that sort of belong to you more I suppose. So we have this idea of sheep, and we have this idea of meadows. So the world has these little meadows. The sheep will only eat food in these very specific meadows. And your job is, you know, you're partly exploring the world, looking for wild creatures to find and charm. But you're also wanting these sheep to graze. So you're also wanting to put them in meadows and have them eat grass and get woolly, so you can shear them and get wool. And you can... It almost gives you a kind of meta game that's like... it gives you a reason to be in a place. Because when you have a big open sprawling space, it's like, well, the player can be anywhere. Why do they care about being in one place versus another? And the sheep kind of helps to centre that a little bit. You know, and like give them a sort of radius about which they're operating for a bit until they pick their sheep up and then they think, oh, where am I going next? And then when that breaks and people get distracted and they chase a creature, a wild creature, and they end up miles away from their sheep, they're like, oh, where did I leave my sheep? And that's good as well. That was the sheep being sheared. So spawning creatures. It's a big world, and we make loads of different creatures in the world. And we make them in different ways, like some of them are just like sitting on a bit of concrete or sitting in a tree. But some of them are hidden, some of them are moving around, Some of them are really tiny and can like hide in cracks. Some of them are like massive. And this is Flock's not a procedurally generated game, it's a handmade game. So all of those things are positioned by hand. And as we went down the road of, you know, making this game feel nice, we realized that we want it to feel as little like a video game as possible. Like, we didn't want a sense of like, oh, I know where to get that creature, you just go there and that's where it spawns. Because that just feels like really mechanical. It doesn't feel like equivalent to going for a walk in the woods and maybe you'll see a squirrel and maybe you won't see a squirrel. You certainly won't be able to go to the same tree and go, there's the squirrel that I know spawns there. So what that meant is we had to have loads of these things, loads and loads of spawners. What you're seeing here is like these, each one of these little wireframe 3D things is like a spawner, and then there's some like debug stuff that says like why it's spawning and why it isn't spawning. And then we have a day-night cycle in the game, and every morning we roll the dice on every single spawner to see whether it's going to spawn that day. And it's almost like, well, if the dice came up for one of those spawners, it means the creature's decided to hang out in that space in that day. And we have enough redundancy that you can't ever reliably know where to find anything. And then we have a day-night cycle, so we have some creatures that spawn only in the mornings and some that only spawn at night. And, you know, they all have like their own, some of them are there all the time, but a bunch of them have like various windows of time. And the game on the server, we've got four players flying around, and we can't spawn all the creatures that are going to spawn on a day all the time, because every creature we spawn is like, it will make audio and it has taken up memory and it takes up CPU. It's like, there's a bunch of stuff that's happening for every creature. So what that means is the server has to continually figure out where the best place to have the creature budget is. So it's constantly looking where all the players are, it's looking at what direction they're heading in, what they can see, and broadly speaking, its aim is to like give the illusion that everywhere the players go, they'll be able to find stuff. And what's actually happening is, if I turn 90 degrees and I look that way, the server goes, oh, we better start making some creatures over there in case they go over there. And if they start moving in that direction quickly, they'll go, oh, well, we need to make some creatures. They're definitely going in that direction, so let's make some creatures even further away in that direction. And then behind the player that's heading away from that point, it's like, well, no one's looking at this creature anymore. We might be able to get rid of it. And then there's some complexity around that, because it's like, if you have a huge creature that's a bit like, I don't know, like a big flying whale, and you fly past it, and then you turn around and look back at where it was, you know, it's weird if it's not there anymore. It's like, where's that big whale gone? Whereas if they're little tiny creatures that you could plausibly think, well, it just went in a crack, you can kind of get away with it. So all the creatures have their own little ways of informing the system about like when's a good time to make them or destroy them. And hopefully, like, the idea is that we end up with a sort of believably organic experience of like looking for things, while also being able to run like on the Xbox One or the PlayStation 4 with four players. So there's a bunch of stuff about listening in this game. When you go for a walk in the woods or whatever, you often hear way more animals than you see. And over the period of time I've been working on Flock, I've been getting a little bit into like this, listening, bird listening, like trying to be able to identify what birds are around just by hearing them, rather than even caring whether you spot them or not. I'm not very good at it, but, you know, it's early days. And for Flock, I wanted to build a sort of similar system, or at least a system that sort of emulated my very layperson's perception of how birdsong actually works. So when you're standing in the woods listening to birds, you don't get the sense they're all just, each one is just randomly singing at any old time. It's much more a sense of like, each one has its own rough time slot. You get the sense the birds are listening, right? Like, this bird will sing, and then it's waiting to see whether it gets a response, and then after a certain amount of time has elapsed, it'll sing again. And why that's good, if you're listening for those things, it's handy, because it's like, oh, I just heard that thing. If I wait a somewhat believable amount of time, like a reliable amount of time, I might hear it again. And then you hear it again, you're like, oh yeah, that's that, okay, what's that? And you have this, it's not completely exact science, because birds will move or stop singing for whatever reason, but Like, it definitely gives you this sort of sense, a gentle rhythm to the experience of listening to the world. So I tried to build this system where it's like, I don't know how well you can see this, but what we're looking at here is like, on the screen there's like three tracks, and there's like a playhead that plays along. Each track has a bunch of slots, and as you move around, each player has one of these for their own experience, and as the player moves around, it looks at creatures near them and inserts creatures into those slots. And the creatures are never allowed to hog the slots for too long. Well, we have three tracks. We have the local one. There's a turquoise cylinder around the player. That's like your local range. And in that slot, you get a very fast turnaround. So the track moves very quickly, and creatures will sing much more rhythmically. On the basis that, like, if you're in this copse looking for a hidden creature, there's a hidden creature here somewhere, and if you're looking for that, it's annoying to have to wait a minute or whatever. You want this artificial sense of like, oh, just let it sing again every 15 to 20 seconds so that I can like find out where it's hiding. And then we have a wider radius, you know, much further away. That's the outer cylinder we can see. And in that, it's very similar. I think we favour rarer creatures being in that one, and we have it move much more slowly. And the idea is to sort of give you the sense of like, oh, there are creatures further away, and I might hear something that I actually do want to catch. Like, oh, there's a rare thing. I don't know what that is. I want to go and find that. And so having a wider radius that's less often singing is a way of achieving that. And then we have a dedicated track for hidden creatures. So what that means is if you're in a space with... So this space here has, for example, these like little glowing, they're like thrips. They're kind of annoying, mosquito-y, glowing creatures. And if you only had a local track, then potentially a bunch of these would just drown out the hidden creature. So you always want the hidden creatures to have their own dedicated track so that you can like guarantee that the players are going to be able to use that audio to find them. Okay. So a little bit about the networking in this game. I mean, I could do a whole like talk about this networking stuff. It's easily the most complicated bit of Flock, I suppose. I'm just going to show the video I showed before. It's hard to visualize this stuff. So some high-level things about the networking in Flock. So one is that this is an Unreal Engine game, and the Unreal does loads of the low-level stuff for us. So we don't have to worry about like how players actually connect to each other and how they mechanically send their data back and forth to each other. Like Unreal deals with that, you know, at a low level, and gives us a much higher way of sending useful game code level messages back and forth. Our game design helps a lot. Like, we're not making a game in which contention between players is important, really. It's not really competitive. It's not like players can kill each other, or, you know, it's possible that two players might see the same rare creature and go and see who can get to it first, but it's not really the vibe of the game for that to be the case. We don't have to worry too much about the game being fair. Lots of those video games, lots of like first person shooters or whatever, work on a sort of server authoritative basis where it's like the server is the arbiter of what the correct game state is. And clients, you know, people connected to the game, make their moves, do whatever they want to do, and then the server gets told what they wanted to do, and then the server plays those moves and updates the state of the world, and then it tells all the players in the game where everyone is, and then depending on the amount of network latency, the players then have to like do some sort of shimmying around or like, you know, basically interpolating between whatever it is they've been doing since and what the server told them actually happened. For Flock, that felt really bad. Like when we implemented that sort of move sending rollback system, it just didn't feel that great because so much about the way this game feels is about the very moment-to-moment 60 frames a second of, like, you have this bird that you can steer and make very precise, like Hohokam, you can make these very precise organic patterns with the bird's tail as it moves around and the way the flock moves around. And any time the server was like, oh, no, sorry, mate, you're actually 2 meters over that way, so we're going to have to slide you a little bit, it just doesn't feel good. And so we just went, you know what, let's just make this game client authoritative, which means that the server just gets told what the clients did. So every player locally moves around and always feels great. Like, it will, you know, as long as you're running on a decent computer, it will feel really, really smooth and lovely. You then tell the server, hey, I'm at this position. Server then takes that information, doesn't query it in any way, really, and just sends it out to all the other players, which means that the clients are responsible for saying where they can be. So if someone wants to hack the game and say they're somewhere else, then they're welcome to do that for this game. What then happens is that all the players build a kind of big list of all the known positions of all the players, and effectively we just like choose a sensible point to interpret that's as close to the real time as we can without running out of data. So everyone else you see in the game is kind of faked, but faked based on all the real positions that we knew about. So we're not doing any like simulation of exactly what moves they made or any of that stuff. So it's actually like conceptually a lot simpler to deal with, and it just feels a lot nicer on the clients. The other thing to say is that we try and limit the amount of data that we send backwards and forwards for the creatures. So as when we're not like, when the, although the server is responsible for spawning and despawning the creatures, we aren't like then micromanaging those creatures on the server and like trying to constantly tell all the clients like where all the creatures are. We just like have clever ways of like making them deterministic. So it's like when a creature has a certain behavior, the server determines what the behavior is going to be. It maybe needs to generate a random seed for that and send that to the clients, and then the clients can just do their own thing locally. Which again just limits the amount of network traffic you're sending backwards and forwards. It also means that when you're charming a creature, you as a client take control of that creature. And the server just lets you be in charge of telling the other players where that creature is. Because again, like having the server mediate that thing where you're trying to get to exactly the right position of this creature that's moving away from you, as soon as you introduce network latency to that backwards and forwards, it just feels awful. So that's all the tech stuff. I reckon I've got a few minutes to go through some concept art. So this is a bunch of concept art. So our art director, Richard Hogg, he's mainly a kind of a 2D by trade. He was originally a 2D illustrator, animator. You know, he's into drawing and painting and vector art. A lot of his work in Flock is on that basis. So although he did all the 3D modeling of the creatures in the game, we had an amazing team of art folks doing a lot of that stuff as well. So a lot of the work Dick did was like finding photographs, photographic reference. There's a lot of, these are the kind of, these are some sort of Hoon Zone elements, which is a Hohokam expression of like, I don't know, just like a playground that you're mucking about in is like hooning around. And these are like some early Hoon Zone concepting. Lots of like him taking screenshots of the game and just drawing over it. Figuring out, like, almost like some of it looks like sort of architectural type work, I suppose. We've got loads of early creatures. It was a really fun process of like taking all these drawings and then just like gradually over lots of meetings, just trying to figure out how to boil that into like 12 believable families with just enough like wrinkles and like weird stuff, because you don't want it to be too, if it's too on the nose, then it's boring. You want it to be like real nature, where it's like some of the taxonomy is a little bit like chunky, or like, you know, it feels like it's been made by humans in a sort of slightly imperfect way. There's lots of graffiti in the game. This is like a really early concept of graffiti in a skate bowl. Lots of like mountain, looking at cliff faces. One of the things about this game was like, that was really hard to, that we didn't appreciate early on, was like when you make landscape stuff, you can make it look really amazing close up, but you also have to potentially make it look good when you're on the other side of the map looking at a cliff face from miles away. And we often had to go back and like redesign them so that they would look nice at a distance rather than some weird sort of ugly thing. Lots of color stuff. Yeah, lots of figuring out colors and lots of figuring out how shapes of creatures might be nice in the landscape. A few bits of concepts of concrete forms. The earliest bit of concept art, probably the first drawing we did. Another really, really early one. Some NPC stuff. Some architectural stuff. How long have I got? I've got like 30 seconds. Great. some bunkers, lots of concrete in this game, lots of like weathered concrete, and figuring out what weathered concrete looks like. Lots of foliage, flower studies, really early but really important mood piece, figuring out texture and sort of how sketchy things could look. Skip that one. Really early clock when it was going to be quite abstract. NPCs and trees. And that's it. Thanks.